Easter Sunday on Heartland Live. We are definitely in the process of developing some things here. And on this, we have, I guess a bit unusual of a circumstance in that on Easter Sunday, we are live streaming, and it's coming via remote from quarantine as it continues here. You know, we're in the process of developing this, as is very evident to you, I'm sure, as you see how we're doing this, and we're kind of testing this as we go along. And this morning, we are going to be, doing a bit of a check. So, as we're doing this together by distance, there is definitely, something lacking for us. And what appears to be lacking is the presence of people, the opportunity to spontaneously interact, to enjoy each other's company, to hear what's going on. Well, thankfully for the electronics, we're able to get together for a bit and do it this way. I know last week that the reason for our check is because, my words were kind of coming in edgewise. That's an interesting statement. Dr. Stewart told me at work. He said, we got the video, but you were kind of, I wasn't doing the job lying down, but it certainly appears to have been this way. Well, this morning, we're going to run a little check here, and we're going to be talking about the resurrection of Jesus Christ, the resurrection from the dead, how Jesus spoke about that in real time, a real time application for his followers then and for his followers in the present time. Right here, we are going to, if we were together, we'd do a little break and kind of think about a song like, "Strength will rise when we wait upon the Lord, when we wait upon the Lord." As a matter of fact, we were going to send you a link, and that would be a great song to think on and worship the Lord with on this Easter Sunday morning. So, right now, we're going to take a break. So, just a moment. Hi! I guess my break was a little longer than what I anticipated. Sorry, from what I've understood, I've been carrying on, but you haven't been getting it. But we're getting it now, so at least I hope we are, and I hope that my words aren't coming in edgewise, but are kind of straight up now. At least that's the effort that we've been doing here. Well, this morning, we're going to be talking about the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. And I'm going to ask you to turn with me to John chapter 14. John chapter 14, where in real time, Jesus brings home this application in real time. This was a crucial time in the life of his followers, his believers. A crucial time in which he delivers this promise to them. In John chapter 14, at verse 9, or excuse me, at verse 19, Jesus says this, "Yet a little while, and the world will see me no more. But you will see me, and because I live, you will live also." Hey, let me back us up here for a moment and talk about this thing of caring about misinformation. Misinformation, it's troubling and it can be damaging, outright damaging. Troubling. I recall as a grade school child, some misinformation that was handed to me kind of inadvertently passingly, yet I carried it around for years. The misinformation had to do with a classmate of mine who also attended the same church as I did. This information had to do with his mother. You see, his mother during those years suddenly passed away. And as she passed away, I was taken back by that. Let me adjust the light over here for a moment. There we go. Back. I was taken back by this event which happened to his mother. She had cancer and passed away during those years. And I recall asking at home, how did she get cancer? How does somebody contact that? When I saw the impact on him and his family, I was very concerned. And so I was told in a very passing manner that she fell down the stairs. And immediately, my mind went to thinking the connection between cancer and a person comes from falling down the stairs. And you can imagine what happened. Frequently, from that point, when somebody would fall down the stairs or have some fall, I would begin to be very concerned about cancer coming to our family. Well, that was clarified for me years later, that there is not a direct cause and effect between taking a fall, like down the stairs, and having cancer. That was a relief. Also, there is another bit of misinformation that comes out and about. You probably had some of this. It's this thing on where babies come from. The stork brings them. You know, that's kind of misinformation that's around, and we're not going to go any further on that one because, well, I'm sure you have had pieces of misinformation given to you on that topic. Enough said. You know, also misinformation that I received when younger from my older brother, who had a big concern that I understand perfectly well, that I was not his brother. You see, he took great effort to explain to me, and repeatedly so, that, you see, you were born to Grody Guggenheimersten. Names have been changed to protect the innocent. You were born to him, and Mom and Dad felt sorry for him and for you, so they decided to take you as a child. You're not my brother. You are not my brother. And I remember carrying that round as a kid. And one day, my mom relieved the weight of that being carried around in my heart and on my mind by seeing me kind of on the couch in the living room with a blue funk kind of attitude coming out. And she sat down with me there, put her arm around me, and said, "So, Tom, you don't think that you're my son." And she went over the days that brought me home, how I was born in the local hospital. And she went over that and assured me I was her son. You know, that was a weight lifted. Misinformation. There's been a lot of misinformation that's come out concerning the coronavirus. Even the news have broadcast that. Things like the masks don't help you, don't even try, don't consider them. And then realizing, you know, they aren't the complete filter, but they are surely beneficial and helpful, and you should participate in that. CDC, Harvard University, others putting that out, that this is a way to mitigate this problem of the coronavirus. It was a crucial time in the life of the believers when Jesus spoke to them the words that we read in John chapter 14. This morning, we're going to talk about this real time communication of information that Jesus gave to us. Some have perceived this as being misinformation. Some have called this the opiate of the people. Some have referred to it as superstition. I remember when in West Lafayette, someone trying to relieve me of my delusion as I was there for the purpose of biblical counseling training and involvement in the local church, lead me of my delusion of this belief in Jesus by communicating to me the things that he had learned there at West Lafayette University on myths. So his effort was to relieve me. Misinformation. Jesus communicates information on this crucial time in the lives of his followers. It's a crucial time that he talks to them about the real-time application of his resurrection. And I want you to share with me in this as we take a look in John chapter 14 about, because I live, he says, you will live also. Because I live, you live in real time. You know, it is good to be a follower of Jesus Christ, because in that we have the opportunity to hear his voice as our shepherd. And he goes before us and he leads us out. The voice of someone who is not the shepherd, a stranger's voice, they will not hear. They will not follow. Jesus communicates that to us in John chapter 10. And here, on this crucial time in the life of his followers, he talks to them about the real time application of his resurrection. Something that he had alluded to frequently. As a matter of fact, when he was asked to verify his authority and right to say and to do these things about God, he referred to his resurrection, John chapter 3. Later, when he was asked for a sign, some kind of indicator that he really was and doing what God had him sent him to do and that he was the Messiah, he said, no other sign shall be given to you than this. And he refers to the resurrection. The resurrection is a verification for us, and he communicates information around this resurrection. We're going to be talking about two things. First of all, his promise at that time. And then we're going to be talking about his promise for this future time, this future that we will all be in it. Involved in. It's a crucial time. Let's talk about his promise at that time. The time that this was taking place was when Jesus was only a day away from his crucifixion. It was a time when by noon the next day, he would be on the cross, at least according to Luke chapter 24 and verse 33. It was that time. And we're going to take a look initially at what was on Jesus' mind at that time. I'm going to ask you to turn with me, if you have your Bible with you, to John chapter 13, where we look in on the context of this. John chapter 13. In John chapter 13, we read this. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of the world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Jesus knew He had it surely affixed in his mind by perceiving the times and the accord of those times with what he knew from the Word of God. He knew that the time had come for him to depart. This is the Passover in which Jesus instituted the Lord's table. This is the Passover that took place in the upper room. This was the time he said eagerly, I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. And then he went on and gave them a picture of the future. For I tell you, I will not eat of it again until I eat it anew with you in the kingdom of heaven. Amazing statements. Here, at this point in time, a crucial time, he talks to them with this on his mind. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the completion of this thing. He loved them to the point in time where he cries out, it is finished, and breathes his last. Notice how this says that he loved them. During verse 2, the supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand and that he came from God and was going back to God, arose from the supper, laid aside his outer garment, and taking a towel, tied it around himself. And he began to wash their feet. What was on Jesus' mind? What was on Jesus' mind here was his decision, his ongoing decision to do what was best for those who were his followers. And what he does is he communicates to them in a object lesson this importance of serving other people. Notice how he concludes this. Look with me at verse 12, where he says to them, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his outer garment and resumed his position. Do you understand, he said, what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet. That was important in a dusty place like Jerusalem when they would travel around with sandals. It was an act of service to them, normally a service that was done by a servant, a hired servant. But he, their Lord and teacher, had done this for them. If I, your Lord and teacher, verse 14, have washed your feet, you ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do just as I have done for you. Truly, truly, I say you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you're blessed. You're in a enviable position if you do them. Very important what was in his heart. You know, during the crucial time that we're living right now, a crucial time, I'm thinking of Martin Luther. I've mentioned him before. Martin Luther went through the plague in Europe. And as he did, Martin Luther spoke about the importance of taking precautions, doing what you can, precaution, and then serving. You know, that is an excellent application of what Jesus spoke about here during this crucial time in the lives of the believers. Take precautions and serve. What kind of things can we do to do that very thing, to serve? Several. You know, this week I have been asked several times to pray for folks that I would pray for them. Doctors asking during the situation of which they were in to have prayer for other doctors and doing that, taking it to heart. I've had several people speak with me about situations in this time requiring prayer. That's a service we can engage in and surely should engage in. Also, during this time, it has been brought up through our deacons, a ministry that can be engaged in and properly engage in some plant ministry. This is a ministry where we, through our deacons, are looking at going and providing rototilled garden plots for people that they can use, put their time in and their energy to raise it up. Some plant ministry comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 3, where the Apostle Paul talks about planting and watering and God giving the increase. And you know, that ministry is underway. It's prepared now. It's ready. As a matter of fact, we've already had 6 people around town in the limited exposure that we've had to this who've already asked to have this garden pot put in. You know, we need some folks to help with that. We need some volunteers who would participate with our deacons who have the equipment ready to go now. That would be a good thing during a crucial time that we serve in that capacity. If you're interested, get a hold of Doug Gully. He'll be able to manage that for you, get you involved in that. Also, one final thing that we can do well to serve is to use those masks whenever we're out in public, to take the precaution and use the mask. It serves. It serves by protecting other folks and protecting you. Good time. Good time to do this. It was on Jesus' mind. Having loved them, he loved them to the end, and he served and taught them to serve at a crucial time. Next, I want to talk with you about this matter. That was on his mind. This is in his words. In John chapter 14, Jesus says this. He says, "Yet a little while, and the world will see me no more, but you will see me." Jesus is referring here to his going to the Father in his death. He's referring here to his resurrection, where they will again be seeing him. He is bringing into their real-time experience here that reality of the resurrection, how it can impact them. You know, this was a repeated phrase in John chapter 13, after Judas had been identified and gone out. Jesus says, verse 31, "When he had gone out, Judas, Jesus said, 'Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. And if God is glorified in him, God will glorify him in himself and will glorify him at once. Little children, yet a little while and I am with you, yet you will seek me. And just as I said to the Jews, now I say to you, where I'm going, you cannot come.'" A little while, he said. Again, later in this whole situation that they were in at that time, a crucial time, look with me at John chapter 16, verse 16. "Yet a little while, he said, and you will see me no longer, and again a little while, and you will see me again." And they heard this 3 times over, this little while. And some of the disciples, verse 17, said to one another, "What is this that he says to us, 'A little while, and you will not see me, and again a little while, and you will see me, and because I'm going to the Father?'" So they said, "What do you mean by this, 'a little while'? We do not know what he's talking about." And Jesus, knowing that they wanted to ask him about this, he said, "Is this what you are asking yourselves, what I mean by saying, a little while and you will not see me, and again a little while and you will see me. He's talking here about this time. And he gives an illustration here that brings home specifically this thing about his death and his resurrection. He says, truly, truly, I say to you, you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. You will be sorrow, but your sorrow will be turned to joy. And he gives a quick illustration that fits perfectly. He says, when a woman is about to give birth because her hour has come, when she was to deliver the baby, she has travail. There is sorrow. And yet when she's delivered the baby, she no longer remembers the anguish for the joy that a human being has been born into the world. So also you have sorrow now, but I will see you again and your hearts will rejoice and no one will take that joy from you. You know, there's a very important point for us to pick up here on the little while at this crucial time. This present difficulty was just for a little while. As a matter of fact, it was only a few more hours and Jesus would be on that cross. From noon to 3 o'clock, the sixth hour to the ninth hour, according to the Jewish calendar or the Jewish timekeeping. And that little while would be bringing to them a lot of distress. Crucial time, a crucial time. And he said, yet again a little while, 3 days, and he would be seen again by them in the resurrection. He says, in that day when they have joy that no one takes from you, you will ask nothing of me. Truly, truly, I say to you, whatever you ask the Father in my name, I will do. He will give to you. Great thing for us to bear in mind here on thus. Crucial, critical, distressing, difficult times are a little while. And because of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, we can handle these with prayer to God and effectively find a joy, a happiness of heart that cannot be taken from us, his followers of Jesus Christ. Yet a little while. Jesus says this is a figure of speech that he's given to them. He's going to the Father that he'll come, and they say we see it plainly. This was in Jesus' mouth. It was his words on a crucial time, ones that we do well to take to heart. Here, now, by Jesus' promise, this. We see this. John chapter 14, Jesus says, yet a little while, and the world will see me no more. But you will see me. And because I live, you will live also. That is the key of the promise. The key of the promise that you will live is because he lives. You will not live because of what you do. You will live because of what he is doing. You live because I live. It's contingent on that. It's conditioned by that. And that is the statement about the resurrection for us. It is our confidence because, you see, Jesus did rise from the dead. The Bible tells us that by the Spirit of God, he was shown to be the Son of God with power by his resurrection from the dead. Romans chapter 1 and verse 5. This resurrection is the evidence of our living too. He was seen, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, alive by the 12 apostles, 500 others, and even the apostle Paul himself, demonstrating that he's alive. Because he lives, you live also. That's the promise, and it's conditioned on his living, not on what you're doing, not on what you've accomplished, but what he did in his death, paying for the total sin debt. His resurrection, demonstrating to the world the reality of what he's saying in a visible, empirical, identifiable manner. The resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. It fits crucial times, it fits all times. It is our confidence. And not only just the present, in the present world, it has application for the future times too. His promise for this future, he says. First of all, he's going to talk about to us the immediate future. In the immediate future, he says this, in that day, verse number 20, you will know. You will, by experience, the day that his resurrection, you will know with a certainty that I am in the Father, and the Father is in me, that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. You know, Jesus had said that this resurrection was going to bring to them some great benefits. His death going to the Father was going to be the avenue for him to send the Spirit. He says that to us. I will ask the Father, he'll give you a helper, the Spirit who will be with you forever. He'll be in you. The Spirit, verse 25, the Helper who will teach you all things and bring these things to your remembrance. At the point of need, the Spirit turns them up. At the point of need, we have communication. This is the benefit of his death and resurrection in the present time, that we have this Spirit, and with this Spirit, we have this too. Notice with me, verse 27, peace I leave with you. My peace I give you, not as the world gives, give I unto you. He says, let not your heart be troubled, neither let them be afraid. At a crucial time for them, a crucial time for believers in the future, he says, peace. A settled harmony exists between God and me. And therefore, we have peace that he leaves with us. And then he says, in our subjective experience, my peace I give to you. The Spirit of God, in which Jesus promises, I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you, verified by the resurrection, this Spirit which grieves us when there is sin, this Spirit which is quenched when we're not walking in accord with him, this Spirit that produces fruit in us, this Spirit that provides peace, comfort, intercession, this Spirit is for our present time based on the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Because I live, you live also, and you live like this, with the Spirit, with the peace, with the teaching, with the reminding. This is part of it for a crucial time. He spoke that to them, and for a crucial time, we can draw on this in real time. That's where Jesus is at. And finally, we're going to take a look at this ministry not only of the Spirit, not only of his peace, but also this ministry that he gives to us, where he says, for your future. There is for us a yet to come future for this. When Jesus said to him, or to them, in that day, you will know. I am in the Father. You are in me, and I'm in you. We are together in this. He, leaving that truth with them, had promised them this. Let not your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, John 14:3. And if I go and prepare a place, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. And where I'm going, you know, and the way you know. We don't know. Tell us. Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. If you really knew me, you'd know my Father as well. This is that part of his promise that has future, that you will experience the coming again of Jesus Christ. And he takes it to himself. This is the promise that Jesus gave that has a future. In every situation, there is this future based on the resurrection of Jesus Christ. You know, this is a important matter to me. There are times when I see my own sin, my own transgression, my own iniquity very clearly. And I see, and, Lord, you know, all of us have these sins that crop up. There's a book that I have kind of referred to before. It is a book about respectable sins, things that we tolerate. As a matter of fact, we just kind of excuse that are sins. He lists them here like this. He lists anxiety, frustration, discontent, unthankfulness, pride, look at what I've accomplished, selfishness, lack of self-control, impatience and irritability, anger, judgmentalism, looking at others and having an opinion that this is the way it ought to be and what they ought to do. Not based on what God says, but our own. Envy, jealousy, sins of the tongue, worldliness, respectable sins, sins that we give place to. And Jesus' great promise to us is that in that day, the day initiated in the resurrection from the dead, in that day, the day when he comes again and takes us to himself, in that day, in that day, he says, you will know that I am in the Father, and you in me, and I in you. And I want you to know that that does it for me. That does it for every believer, that Jesus Christ is enough. His resurrection fits real time in every situation that we encounter, situations that are cruel, crucial, that are disturbing, that are difficult, every time we have this, His provisions, and we can serve, we can pray, we can take action to benefit other people, we can do that based on the resurrection of Jesus Christ, because we are in Him. You know, there's a song that we're going to send you the link to. It's a great song. It's a song that we would end with here, which we're about to end. The song is here at the bottom of the screen. Just because He lives. Because He lives. Because He lives, I can face tomorrow in real time situation, whatever this is. I can face tomorrow. Because He lives, all fear is gone. Because I know He holds the future, and life is worth the living just because He lives. How sweet to hold a newborn baby and feel the pride and joy He gives. But greater still, the calm assurance that this child can face uncertain days because He lives. It's this: because I live, you live. In real time, in real time. The resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, as Jesus demonstrated to us here in that crucial time in the life of His believer, fits all over in real time, with direction of what to hold to, what to look forward to, with direction of what to do in the midst of this. Real time. Because He lives. But I hope that you have an enjoyable day at home with those who are there, and that you can celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ in real time. Have a great holiday. Take care. Bye.